Welcome to the All Things Geekery Podcast. I'm your host, Detached.
Hey guys, and I'm Victus. So to start off, this is a big spoiler warning for those that will continue to listen to the podcast. We are going to delve into storyline of Forsaken. We will delve into all the lore details presented to you. We'll try to avoid, to our best of abilities, rabbit holes and tinfoil theories, though that is not 100% guaranteed.
With that, absolutely not 100% guaranteed.
Not 100% guaranteed. We're both very squirrel and back. But with that said, before we delve into, on everybody's mind is, should we get Forsaken? We have been honestly burnt by Bungie before. They've remedied some things, but this was their Hail Mary. This was their bring back. And the short answer to this is yes. Absolutely 100% pick up Forsaken. It is the Taken King and more. It is a remedy to all situations. So with that said, we're going to delve into the plot here, starting off in what we experienced in our playthroughs of Forsaken.
Yes, so jumping into the plot of the Forsaken, one of the biggest storylines we have seen to date, and it continues to be kind of an unfolding story. We've seen a lot of stuff happen over these last 2 weeks. It has only been 2 weeks, and we've seen a massive plot in this game. If you guys don't know anything about Forsaken, if you have gone basically dark with the game, you haven't kept up with Twitter, you haven't watched anything, then here is a basic overview of the plot. This story starts in the Reef. That's where it takes place. We are going back to the Reef. The story itself is going to revolve around this massive prison break that happens in the Prison of Elders, and there is a new race that we get to interact with, we get to fight, we get to see, and they are basically an undead version of the Fallen, and they're called the Scourge.
Zombies.
And
we're fighting zombies.
Yeah, they're zombies. Yeah, we're fighting fallen zombies. Creepy, very creepy. They are ultimately led by a chieftain. His kind of background and where he comes from, there's still a lot to kind of unfold where he comes from, but they have a awoken leader, and that's Aldrin Sav. A lot of people kind of wondered what happened to Mara and Aldrin. Well, we find out in this storyline that Aldrin has absolutely lost his freaking mind, and he is leading this band of dead fallen, and they have a group called the Barons. Well, the Barons are basically their elite of the elite, and you will recognize a lot of them once you jump into the game. There's a few of them that we have seen before, one of them being the Machinist. We actually got to see them in the Rise of Iron in the previous raid. And we have just kind of a big mess going on. So we jump into this massive prison break, and Petra Venge is back again, and she has called for the help of Cade Six and the Guardian. So we get to go on this huge mission with Cade. It's cool to fight alongside of him. And we get to go kind of save the day here at the Prison of Elders. We get to meet Petra again. Bad things happen. Cade dies. And Aldrin is at the hand of this. Aldrin takes out Cade with his own weapon, the Ace of Spades. And now we're kind of at this crossroads of Petra is setting us up so that we can go and fight all of these barons. We can hunt down Aldrin. So that's kind of where we're at, is we are basically in the middle of learning a whole new race of this Scorn and figuring out how this new fallen zombie horde works. And we get to discover kind of where the Awoken came from as well. There was a little bit of history on them in Destiny 1, in the original Destiny. But we get to see a whole new side of things in this one. So that's where we're at. We are basically jumping into a brand new storyline. Like I said, nothing that we have seen to date is as big as Forsaken. The Taken King was as close as we had. And from a size-wise, from content, it doesn't even compare to how big the Forsaken expansion really is.
Absolutely. And another major point to touch on with Forsaken as a whole is that even though we've seen expansions released around pointed stories, it mainly connected around the story quest that you went on. And it revolved around it. Yeah, you did some side stuff, but it didn't seem to all connect back together. Forsaken is different.
Yes, extremely different.
Your public events, your patrols, your bounties, your now introduced world quest, more world quests, all connect back together of what you're trying to accomplish in Forsaken, which is, it's all revolving around what we saw in the trailer, and that was, Cade's death. We saw that before the game in release. We knew it was going to happen. There was no way around it. They kept releasing more and more trailers about how it was inevitable. We tried to dig in and say there's lore that he could survive. Unfortunately, there's not. And it's the first time that in Destiny where we've had a connection with the character and they've been killed off. Or missing, in all the time, we've always saved somebody, or we've always defeated the god, and it was always go after the god. No, this one was, it was personal. This one, we were going after the killer of Cade, but it also, go ahead.
And Cade became a friend, more than just, he was the Hunter Vanguard mentor, but personally to your guardian, you had kind of become friends with Cade. All throughout Destiny 1, Destiny 2's campaign, all the things that you did, Cade actually, through a point, kind of opened up and talked with you. You had kind of a personal relationship with him. So, yeah, like you said, it became personal. It was more than just a mission. It was more than just, hey, I got this bounty that I've got to go do. It truly was it's something that Bungie really kind of twisted the story with, because we see a major character get killed off here. So that's why I was saying we're kind of at a crossroads right now.
Yeah, especially because they've basically killed off their crutch that they've used all of Destiny 2 to bring people into Destiny. You always have the heroic Zavala or the scholarly Ikora inspiring people, but then there's always Cade providing that sense of humor. I mean, he was in almost every single live-action trailer that they released for Destiny 2. And every story wasn't complete unless he had his say-so in something. So yeah. And it's really a staple to show how confident that they are, that they're able to kill Cade off in such a way that's both meaningful, impactful, and that they have confidence they'll be able to recover and keep going with the story after we've accomplished our goal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with Bungie being bold enough to say, hey, we're going to kill off one of the main characters, he was the personality of the Vanguard. As much as some people like Zavala, some people like Ikora, I really can't stand either one of them. Cade was definitely my favorite out of the bunch.
Because you hunted me, so, that's why.
Yeah, gotta choose the best class. Come on, little hashtag hunter love there.
Right.
But all in all, you get to see something that we have not seen before in any of the previous games, and there's some dissension happening in the Vanguard right now. You really see it after the Guardian goes and basically picks up Cade's body and brings it back to the tower. There is a dissension happening between Zavala and Ikora. They're at odds with one another right now because Ikora is out for vengeance. She wants revenge for Cade's death, and Zavala is playing the safe game. He's got the people at, the center of everything with the city, and he is basically removed himself from anything that the Guardian is doing. There's a couple of points in the game when you talked to Zavala and he said, if you want to go rogue, it's on you. And he basically washes his hands of having anything to do with you as a guardian anymore. And Ikora, on the other hand, she basically embraces the being a rogue, and she kind of helps you navigate some of those waters because she wants revenge for her friend. The one thing that she kind of has her realization about is once Cade is gone, is she's missing something. You know, she's missing the friendship that Cade brought to the group. And it's something that both me and you talked about on our previous episode, was that Cade was, in a way, that awkward glue that kind of held Zavala and Ikora together. Because the two of them, Ikora and Zavala, have never really seen eye to eye. They've right. been yeah. vanguard. They've been mentors together. They had a common goal, but they've never really seen eye to eye. And Ikora and Cade did. They had more in common than they really knew. So, you know, with Ikora and Zavala being at odds with one another, what does that mean for the city now? What does that mean for, you know, us as guardians? Who are we going to go to? Are we going to have a hunter mentor ever again? Is that position, is it, you know, is there a resume search on the hunt now? are they looking for something? I don't know. I'm curious to find out what they do with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting to see that previously in the Red War, we saw Zavala going out and wanting to take it to the Cabal and try to gather back up the Guardians, whereas Ikora, she felt defeated, she felt lost without her light. And you kind of see the roles switched here. And they both have a logical statement in that Ikora wanted justice for Cade's death, and she knew exactly who to go after. She wanted to rally the Vanguard, and she wanted to storm the reef.
Yeah.
But then Zavala, it hit him so hard that he didn't want to lose any more Guardians. You know, for some reason, it finally brought home what he was wanting to do, which was protect the city, protect the people here, protect the Guardians here. And so he was torn from that. And so when we finally spoke up, big thing there, we spoke up finally. And said, yeah, finally, that
finally.
This, yeah, that we were going to, this is a revenge story, you know. We were going to take him. We didn't care who said what. We were going. And so it kind of alleviated the tension between Ikora and Zavala because they both were getting what they wanted. Ikora was getting her revenge, and the Vanguard were staying together here at the city to protect it. So for Zavala.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, you see something with Zavala kind of staying back and, I don't know, over the last year and a half with what they've done with Zavala, I have liked him less and less as a leader. And from the other guardians that are there in the tower, you have people like Shax, who is a strong leader. Him and Zavala have been at odds for quite some time. And him and basically, his crucible ring is what Shax is after. He's trying to teach the next generation of guardians how to be vanguard, how to be that elite, you know, group of guardians that we've seen all through the centuries. And I guess it begs the question of, your guardian has been going through all of this time from D1 all till now. You've killed gods, you have slain beasts, you have grown in power, you've learned all types of new skills. When do you, as a guardian, become stronger than what the Vanguard ever did? I guess that's really my question for this is there a time that the Vanguard will just no longer need to exist because the Guardians themselves are truly the protectors? Will they need leadership? Will they need people like Shax? Will they need people like Zavala and Ikora? And I guess the ultimate answer is yes, there's always need for leadership in that realm, but are Ikora and Zavala and Shax and that group, are they going to be the ones that continue later down the road? Are we going to see new people come in?
Yeah, we'll wait and see on that. At the end of Forsaken, we didn't see that decision made, which is good. That decision needs to be a good drawn out process to either allow for somebody that's already existed in the story to come forward, and or one of three things: somebody has already existed, a restructuring of the Vanguard, and or a new character, a worthy character to come into play to become the next Hunter Vanguard leader.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've talked about a few people that could potentially be in that role in a few of our episodes previous to this. So I'm really curious to see what Bungie does with this and where they go with it, because they've got a really big door right now. They have regained a lot of the community's trust, and the community is having an absolute blast. A ton of people are having great times and good feedback in the game. So Bungie, whatever you've been cooking over in the, you know, wheelhouse, keep it up, because it's good. And you know, we love it. We love the story. We love where you're going with it. So the whole revenge piece with what happens there towards Cade's death, there's two really big questions there. The end of the story and how everything was left was really open-ended. And if you guys have not made it all the way through the story, again, sorry, but spoiler alert, we're going to tell you what it is. Because at the end of the story, literally, you have chased all of these barons down. You have killed off all of the leadership of the Scorn. And you are down to Aldrin Sov. You have chased him down, and you basically end up with yourself and Petra holding Aldrin at gunpoint, and Aldrin says, you know, the line between darkness and light is extremely thin, and do we know what side we're on? And the screen basically kind of fades to black, but in the distance you hear a gunshot, and it never says whether us as the Guardian or Petra killed Aldrin. So it kind of leaves an open-ended story there. Did we, as a Guardian, want revenge and we pulled the trigger? Was it Petra on her blood rage and did she kill Aldrin? Or as a Guardian, did we find compassion in what truly happened to Aldrin because he was influenced and he was corrupted by something he had no control over to a degree? And I don't know. Personally, I think we may have had compassion in one point in that scene when we lowered our weapon. But in the end, I think we probably pulled the trigger as the Guardian. I truly do think we finished Aldrin.
Yeah. I mean, for those that wanted to complete the revenge story, that's why it was left open the way it was, because you get to decide who pulled that trigger. And I think it was a smart move on Bungie's part, because you could tell as you're going through the story, as you were actually able to see that Aldrin was being corrupted by something, you knew it. You could see it because he was seeing visions of Mara that weren't actually Mara. She wasn't talking the way she did. And it's all about saving his sister. He was obsessed with it.
So yeah, that really kind of threw his vision off of what that goal was. And like I said, that line of the line of darkness and light is extremely thin, and do we know what side we stand on? There was a lot of truth in what he said there. Because I think Bungie couldn't have done anything more perfect with the end of that scene by leaving it open-ended like that. When I first saw that Aldrin killed Cade, I was like, all right, this sucker's got to go, man.
Right.
I'm chasing this dude down, and he's getting a bullet to the head. But at the end, I truly had kind of an emotional shift with the guy. And he almost, in a way, couldn't help what happened to him. So there was a little bit of compassion that happened there at the end. But I still stand with what I said. I do think that we ended Aldrin.
Yeah, I was right there with you. I at the end, I wanted our Guardian to lower its gun and to pick up Aldrin and for him to go stand trial. You know, not to blood for blood right then and there. Whatever, right. If there was a trial system, however the Vanguard carry that out. But you know, and then it cut to black and the, you know, gunshot is heard. And I'm right there with you. I suspect that our guardian pulled the trigger, but it leaves it open for you to say that your guardian was 100% compassionate and it was Petra that pulled the trigger on him.
Yeah.
But I mean, it working up to that point, we can't figure out what is corrupting Aldrin Sov, and it's at the last boss that really reveals, right before we get to the point where we're holding gun to it, we reveals what it is, what creature is, you know, giving him these visions of Mara, because as she's going into the void and comes back to embrace him, all of a sudden you see these tentacles come out and this mutated thing comes out and swallows him, which it looks like a fleshy servitor with tentacles and it can summon Taken, and it has the name Voice of Riven. So,
and there's lots of speculation about what this thing is. So I've seen stuff from people talking about it's Kallax, the prime servitor, and he was Taken, but you can't take metal. It has to be flesh and blood that has to be taken. So there's all kinds of speculations out there. It does look like it is part servitor, and it kind of goes back to what a chimera really is. So if you look in Greek mythology, and Bungie, thank you for throwing this in. I love Greek mythology. It's one of my favorite topics. And when you look at that, a chimera in the Greek mythology description is a fire-breathing female monster with a lion's head, a goat's body, and a serpent's tail. And the description goes on to say that it's a creature that takes on multiple forms of other creatures. And that's kind of what we saw. We saw something with tentacles. We saw something that the tentacles looked like they were Taken almost, but then it had flesh and it had blood and teeth and organs and all these things along with it. So there's a lot of speculation out there of what this thing really is. It's called the, you know, basically Chimera. It's part of Riven, and I think it goes back to kind of what we saw with Oryx. So Oryx had things that he had created to be basically a voice of him. He created his son. He created his daughters. He created beings around him that had his malice and will to go and do his bidding. And I think that's what this chimera was. I think it was part of Riven that was out to do a specific task, and that was to corrupt Aldrin Sov and make Aldrin think that it was his sister that needed to be released from the Dreaming City, when in reality it was this much larger task out there that this thing was part of. So that's my theory, anyways.
Yeah, and it does line up with a lot what we see in compared to Oryx and what we eventually find out about Riven. But you know, after we beat that boss, me personally was kind of expecting from previous expansion that was the end of the story, you know, but that is not the case with Forsaken, and that was only half the story in all truthfulness, because the story continues. You know, you've done your revenge story, you've got your, you know, justice has been done, but now you need to find out what this thing was trying to get out of the Dreaming City. What was Aldrin going to release? And you start a quest line to enter the Dreaming City that Petra has deemed you needed to get to help her with the Dreaming City and what's going on there, because Aldrin, you know, the Dreaming City is corrupted, so she needs your help with it. So we finally get to the Dreaming City once you go to a very long quest, and the first thing you do is activate an oracle for Petra. And she alludes to what this oracle does, and you finally activate it for her, and the next voice you hear is the true Mara Sov.
Which we now know Mara Sov is actually alive.
Yes. Rumors confirmed.
Yep, rumors confirmed. Now, alive as we probably think of alive is probably not how she's alive, because I don't think she has a physical body right now. I think she is truly ascendant. Yep. So.
Yep, but she is in full. She is not wavering even when she finds out about her brother. She knows exactly what caused it, and that reverts back to Riven, which she says that Riven is corrupted along with three of her Tekken servants or helpers. And so then she tasks us with what it then leads into the raid, which is go get the heart of Riven. And it's left there.
Well, and some people may not know what Riven is, because Riven is not a name that is common to the game. It's nothing that you've heard of up until now. So unless you guys are steeped into Destiny's lore, and a lot of Destiny's lore is interpretation based. There's not a lot of like, hey, go to this place in this book and it'll tell you exactly what this thing is. There are multiple facts scattered across grimoire cards all throughout Destiny 1. And now we've got some of those facts back in Destiny 2, and Forsaken brought in the lore tabs for weapons and ships and speeders and all these different pieces that we get to see now. And those are our grimoire cards. They're actually embedded within these weapons. So a lot of people probably have never even, you know, taking a look at what the Ahamkara really were, outside of maybe you had the bones of Ao, you know, some of the best legs that Bungie ever made for the hunters. And yes, they ripped us off because we don't get them anymore. So thank you, Bungie. But you probably see some of those things in Destiny 1. You saw things like the bones of Ao. Ao was a Ahamkara dragon. So that's probably what most people know of, you know, the Ahamkara. From the lore cards and the grimoire, though, that we've got, and kind of expanding on what Riven is, to what we know, the last living Ahamkara dragon. And there's a reason that she's probably the last one. The Ahamkara were known as Wishgiver dragons, and they gave wishes, but also had kind of a malcontent tied behind those wishes. So they would influence things and people to do their will and get them to bend their ways. And they would grant these wishes to people and things and creatures and different races. And the Vanguard actually stepped in. And because of that, they created what was called the Great Hunt, and it was a killing order made by the Vanguard themselves to go destroy all of the Ahamkara, because these wish granters were too dangerous to just, you know, be unchecked. So that's basically what we know about the Ahamkara to a degree. Riven, like we said, is the last Ahamkara that we know of, and a little bit of backstory that we know from, you know, lore cards is Aldrin Sov actually found Riven as a infant dragon and gave her to Mara Sov as a gift. And Mara became close with Riven. They had a relationship. They're basically was owner and pet. And they had conversations together. They walked the Dreaming City, and Mara had a plan for what she was going to use Riven for in the creation of the Dreaming City and the future plans that she had for the Awoken. And those plans kind of got foiled because basically Riven was taken by what we think is Oryx during the Taken King expansion time frame. And she was corrupted also by what we think is Savathun. So that's still kind of a speculation. That's not been confirmed. But Riven has been corrupted. She has been corrupted by something that is more than just Taken. I believe that there's darkness involved with it as well. And Mara Sov stepped in. She locked Riven away into the bowels of the Dreaming City and kind of threw the key away. And, you know, kept her hidden so that nobody could find her or know about what happened. And that goes back to our previous conversation. We were talking about Mara Sov is, you know, Mara is kind of in this ascendant realm stuck away. Then that's why she has called upon the Guardians. And, you know, her last words were, go and defeat Riven, kill her, and rip out her heart. So that's basically where we're at. That leads us from the beginning of the Forsaken story all the way up to the raid. And now that the raid has happened in the game, we see Riven has been killed. And there's still things that are being unfolded in the story, which is really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoyed how they continue to tie in the raids. And this is the first time in Destiny 2 where the raid is directly tied into the story. You know, all the way up till now, it's always been detour. Let's go visit the Leviathan again to, you know, do some trial of Kallus so that we can prove ourselves even more worthy or to help him. So, but it...
This doesn't really have to do with the story, but just the... You really see the differences in the raid mechanics of Leviathan and what I saw in The Last Wish. So you really see kind of the direction Bungie's going. You had this really rigid, mechanical, basically come and do all of these different steps and things, and then get to a boss at the end. And now you've got The Last Wish, which really seems to go back to the roots of, you've got story and lore and all these different things tied into the raid that are feeding future plots and future points for the game to build upon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's really good to follow through with that story each step along the way throughout the raid. You know, you get to see the taken Tekken witches that are there in the raid that you have to take down. You have to take down this ogre bodyguard from Riven. You have to unlock more the vault of the Dreaming City to get to Riven. And then you finally encounter Riven. And if you prevail, you feel like you've succeeded. You now have the heart ready to present to Mara Sov. And then you realize it was all a ruse. It was all a play for you to actually kill Riven. Riven wanted that.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole end of that was really just kind of a big plot exploit, because that's exactly what Riven wanted. Bungie actually posted a little snippet of the Dreaming City, and it came across in a tweet and said, Riven had one last wish to grant, and she granted it.
Yeah.
So that really kind of opened up some questions on what happened. And that really kind of brings in the question of where we're going next with this. Is the darkness, the whole death of Riven, Mara Sov, there's still so many mysteries out there in the Destiny universe. They've done an amazing job with this expansion. And I think before we touch on what happened with Riven's death and what it unleashed, we need to talk about what the darkness kind of is, or what we at least know about the darkness, because it's something we've heard about since Destiny 1. And that's, you know, the Destiny universe's great enemy. That's, we go back to the Traveler and the darkness. You see that original cutscene, the Traveler was fleeing from the darkness. They've been at this for eons. And we don't really know a whole lot about the darkness, how it functions, what it does. We just know that it is like the ultimate bad guy. It kills everything. And, you know, we've seen little glimpses here and there. I don't think glimpse is the right word. I think manifestation is a better word for it.
Absolutely.
So you look at kind of the hierarchy. Is the darkness is this overlooming evil power, and it has created these manifestations to go do its will, and none of these seem to be working in a way. The first one we saw was really, you know, Oryx. Oryx was the true manifestation of what happens to the darkness when it corrupts something. It corrupted the hive. So we can get into, I'm not going to jump into any of this, but if you guys love lore and you love Destiny, then go read the Book of Sorrows, because that talks about what happened to the hive, and it talks about the darkness and the corruption that happened that brings in Oryx. We've got the Taken themselves. The Taken are a manifestation of the darkness and what happens. And, you know, some other things that we know about the darkness is it's able to influence entire races and worlds. We've seen it multiple times. So it's interesting how this is all played out and where it's kind of come. I mean, we look at Aldrin Sov. Aldrin was definitely influenced and corrupted by something. Now, at the end of the story, we know it was ultimately Riven, but Riven was kind of a stepping stone. There's another level above her that was corrupting her. And then there's another level above whatever corrupted Riven that is corrupting that thing. So there's this massive hierarchy going on. I've got a wild theory, and my theory is that the Drifter has actually brought a piece of the darkness to kind of the last city area. We see the Drifter in the tower now, and there's a lore tab that comes along with the Drifter. And really the last thing that we got to see of the darkness was in Destiny 2's Red War campaign, is we got to see the Traveler come back to life. He killed the looming cabal of an enemy. And, you know, we see this massive light wave go out through the universe. And it basically, what we learned is it paved the way for all the new expansions that were coming. You know, we saw it lead up to all the way to the Reef, which is where we're at now. And the really cool part is after the Reef, there was one other step, and that was Saturn. And maybe that means that we're heading back to the Dreadnought, and we'll see another Hive expansion. I really, really hope that's where Bungie is heading with this thing, with Savathun. But ultimately, the end of this light wave ended way out in the galaxy, and we saw these black triangular ships start to come to life, and everybody speculated that that's what the darkness was. So there's tons of theories out there. But I really do think that the Drifter has come in contact with the darkness, and I think that maybe he has a piece of it, or he's involved with it somehow. There's tons of stuff out there. I'm not going to read this entire lore tab on what the Drifter has seen or done. There's a couple of pieces in here that were just really interesting to me. So this lore tab basically suggests that the Drifter found remnants of the darkness on a planet where there were these giant creatures, these monoliths that had trapped these creatures. And this lore tab describes these creatures as having a gooey, vacuous form with no head, and it suppressed light by producing anti-light fields. And he says there were thousands of these creatures on this planet that they found. Now, the reason I say that that's probably the darkness is because Bungie actually released a few kind of hidden cutscenes that were never really added into the game, and they had this gooey blackness that spread across people, and you saw it kind of overtaking things. So maybe the Drifter has actually encountered this darkness. There's a couple of other pieces in here that talk about these creatures having tentacles and slithering across the ground. So that kind of lines up with some of the things that we've seen so far in game. You know, we've seen this darkness kind of corrupt things. We've seen little bits of black pools of this gooey substance laying around. So who knows? We may be closer to having the darkness in game than we know.
Absolutely. And I think that it all ties back into what happened at the end of the raid with Riven. in that, as you said, it granted the last wish, and our wish was to kill her and take her heart. Riven granted that, but as with any deal with Ahamkara, it always benefits Ahamkara more. It is House always wins, and in this case, it was Riven. She spoke to us even after she was dead, saying she is now able to grant it a curse over the land of the Dreaming City. And, you know, this, I think, ties exactly into a plan the Darkness now. The Darkness sees that the Traveler has awoken. They are ready to meet the threat, and they're establishing the first steps to be able to take over the area. And one of these is to corrupt one of the greatest powers in the system now, which is the Awoken and the Dreaming City and all the powers and technology that they have there.
Yeah. Yeah, almost 100% agree on that. I definitely think that we've only touched just a little bit of truly what the Forsaken has brought to us. Yes, we've got a campaign that has finished through. Yes, we've got a raid that has now had its first clear. It's actually first, like 12 people have cleared this thing now. It's funny, I saw a stat. This is the only wild rabbit that I'll throw out there to give you guys an idea of the difference between the Taken King and Forsaken. The Forsaken raid and the Taken King raid. So when you go into King's Fall and you're taking out orcs, the world's first race, over the first couple of weeks, there were 36,000 people that cleared the Taken King raid. There have been 12 people as of a few hours ago that have cleared the Forsaken raid, to give you an idea of its mechanical level, its size, its complexity, the difficulty level of what they've truly brought into the environment of Destiny. It really is a whole new game. Really is. And I think with that kind of corruption and what we've seen released with Riven, I think we're going to start to see more of that come through people that we have interacted with and people that we know. It's not just the Dreaming City. Yes, the Dreaming City is now corrupted. It's been taken. But what is going to happen to Petra? What's going to happen to Ikora and in the Vanguard and all the people that we interact with and know?
Yeah, and it's really set it up for the next steps, which everybody thinks is the arrival of Savathun as the next uniter of the Taken and the enemies of the light against the Traveler, against the Last City, to finally snuff it out. I definitely see the stepping stones there for that to happen. But overall, amazing expansion. It is the Taken King and more. So much there to do. You never feel like there's nothing to do. There's always quests to do, bounties to do. There's many more exotic quests to run. The PvP is in a great place right now. Their new mode, Gambit, is fantastic. It is a great addition. And I know Bungie's going to capitalize on it.
Yeah, that's definitely been one of my favorite additions into the game for this new PvP, PvE mode. Gambit is a ton of fun. And with what they're doing, it's this whole drip feed. I love the drip feed mentality. Is, you know, these steps open up new things in the world, and we've got a ton of DLC content coming too. So if you guys ever question, should I get this? Then yes, I would say if you loved Destiny 1, then Bungie is finally getting back to the core foundation of what Destiny really is. And I love where the story's going. I can't wait for, you know, the Black Armory, the Joker's Wild, Penundrum, and we're going to go back to the Leviathan once again and find out what, lies there. So there's tons of content to come, for sure.
And I look forward to it. I definitely have high hopes for all the DLCs coming out as part of this year's season pass for Destiny 2. Everything looks like they're going in the right direction and not going to disappoint.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, expect tons of more content on this stuff. So definitely more episodes to come, specifically around Savathun. I definitely want to spend a little more time on Savathun. So yes, maybe one day we will do an episode specifically around Savathun and what she is, where she is, who she is.
Absolutely. Well, with that, that wraps up our podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I'm going to state it again, get Forsaken. It is definitely worth your time for all Destiny players to come back. Bungie has redeemed themselves. It is worth it. And
it is definitely.
Yeah, and more importantly, thank you guys for listening. So definitely appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much. We love recording and we enjoy spending time playing games and doing all the nerdy hobbies, and that's really why we podcast. We podcast because you guys have found interest in it, and thank you so much. Thank you for your support, guys. Really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. And if you guys enjoyed this episode, be sure to stop by and check out our website. Detach has a blog out there with a lot of good articles. We keep our videos out there as well, along with YouTube. So you can go to our website at www.allthingsgeekery.com. You can also find us on Twitter, YouTube, a host of other social media platforms, and we'll keep all those links in the description below.
Yeah, absolutely. If you guys have any specific topics that you would love for us to cover in a future episode, you guys can email those to us at podcastatg@gmail.com. And guys, that wraps up this episode. So as always, you guys stay awesome, and we will see you all in the next episode.